Pilot Lifting Report. Today, I'm going to share with you about the dangerous material in your children's textbooks on Islam. And you're going to, as I stated before on the YouTube, you're going to just be shocked with what I'm going to share. But as this is a Christian show, I always start out with scripture. So today we're reading 1 Corinthians 4:2-5. Wherever it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not my own self, for I know nothing by myself. That am I not hereby justified? But he that judges me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before time, until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsels of the heart. And then shall every man have praise of God. Stewards must be faithful above all things. They're not required to have many gifts, but they must be faithful. Pastor Alfonso Gavano of Hope Christian Fellowship puts it this way. They must be consistent. Are you consistent in your walk with Christ? Is it such that it can be seen as consistent, not only by others, but God as well? Paul shares something about the judgment of others. This is the court of others. It could be seen as undergoing peer influence. What others think about is having some effect, but should it? Paul tells us we should not allow that. In this passage, that is the lowest court. Then there is the court of self-judgment. People tend to swing to the ends on this being severe in how they view themselves. They either see all their faults or simply skip over them. Yes, that's what most of us do. Mostly today, people see themselves as high and lofty, forgetting their shortcomings. I do that from time to time. But even that court, Paul holds in little regard. It is the court of his judgment that matters. How does God see us? Who knows all that we say, do, and think? That is the place we should trust as honest above our own judgment of ourselves. It is the place deserving of our praise, for even our thoughts and intents are known. No fairer and more revealing judgment can be given. Dear Lord Jesus, help me, Lord, to see you first in all I say and do. Lord, may your desires become first and foremost in what we think also. These are not easy things to say. I know you above all others know this is true about us. Definitely what I know about myself, that you know everything. I'm not worthy of your salvation, but somehow you love even me. Help me, Lord, that I may become that faithful steward. Make me stronger and bolder in my faith. In Jesus' name, amen. Wow. Now, today, I'm going to blow your socks off. And I originally put this presentation together for a speech I wanted to give and travel with. But today, I think it's time. I'm listening to my friends, Eric, and many others here who put together these incredibly wonderful shows. And what they do is expose the lies. My question is, how many of you know what's happening in the schools? Well, I taught in schools for 20 years. I work in schools for another 9 as a teacher aide. Some people call them paraprofessionals. Technically, that's what I was those first 9 years. I didn't want to go into education, and there's a reason why I didn't want to. My parents were teachers. They told me, you'll never make any money. And you know what? They're right. They told me, you'll have no life. You won't be able to support your family. You'll have to do different things. You can't live like this. They were right. But the only thing I ever knew about where God wanted me was that it would be where no one else wanted me. That's the only thing I knew. So I'm going to get into this. And it, again, I have said it should blow your mind. So as you can see here, I have two textbooks. Well, there's supposed to be two. Apparently the other one didn't show in this picture. I'll have to figure out why sometime. The first one, it shows the world history. That's a textbook used in the Rochester City School District. It's McDougall Tell's World History. It's constantly used around the country. It's a vile distortion of facts. And there's only about 20 pages on Islam. And they're so bad, we're going to get into it. So let's keep going. And I got to move my mouse. Sorry. All right. Here we go. So what your children are learning about Islam in school is dangerous, people. It's dangerous. Pew Research Center. Oh, pardon me just a second. I'm going to wish I had different screens, but now I have to be able to read. So listen to these stats from Pew Research Center on converts to Islam in 2017. Roughly 8 in 10 U.S. Muslims, 78%, say they have always been Muslim, while 21% converted to Islam. Fully two-thirds of American-born black Muslims say they have not always been Muslim. About 1 in 4 converts say they switched between the ages of 10 and 19, and roughly half, 49%, did so during their 20s. Tell you is that the followers of Islam are targeting children. How are they doing this? Got to ask yourself these important questions. It's important, people. The followers of Muhammad, the lovers of Sharia, started by getting jobs as professors and began influencing future teachers while they are still in college. College professors have status that draws the media to them for answers that fit in news stories. As their status with the media grows, their influence grows on the public. Now, the Islamic professors have influenced what is in your child's textbooks in public and private schools. And I'll tell you more about that towards the end of this presentation. And if you've read my second book, Civilization, Jihad, and the Myth of Modern Islam, some of this will hit you. Now, if there are people out there who want to obtain that book, my best suggestion for you today, there are two ways to get it. One is simply going to my blog, paulsutliff.blogspot.com, and ordering it through there. There are a few people who actually have a copy on Amazon, but the original, I'm working towards a second edition, so it's going to be a while. So let me get going here. In New York State, people, we don't teach about the different religions until a student is in ninth grade. We wait this long because at beginning of adolescence is when children begin to be able to comprehend and question ideologies. We're talking about 13 to 15-year-olds. Keep in mind, we want the kids to ask questions, but we don't teach our children to question the teachers if they say something that doesn't seem right. That's because we teach children to respect those in authority over them. Keep that in mind. Now, take a look at these. This should surprise you. See that Christian student in Florida suspended after a dispute with a Muslim professor? Take a look. College professors. This last one is local to me. And he's part of the reason I do what I do. Now, let's take a look at the beginning of this book here that has to do. This comes from page 264 to 265. It says, this is about what's in the textbooks. It says, at about the age of 40, Muhammad's life was changed overnight when a voice called to him while he meditated in a cave outside Mecca. According to Muslim belief, that of the angel Gabriel who told Muhammad that he was the messenger of Allah. Sounds okay, doesn't it? Does it? Start thinking. We learn from reading the first biography of Muhammad, the Sir al-Rasul and the Hadith, that something's not exactly right. What do I mean by that? I'm going to have to escape out of here for just a second. Now, if you are paying attention, you're going to, there we go. I can see that. Okay. Just want to make sure everybody's listening. You know, this is what I'm getting at. This information is out there, and we, as a people, are willfully ignorant, and this is dangerous. Why am I saying that? Many of us choose not to know about Islam. I chose not to. I admit that. I didn't know how being, again, willfully ignorant, which basically makes you stupid. When you start looking up the facts, they're a little more shocking than you want to believe. So this comes from Sahih Bukhari, Hadith 4953, Book 65. And there's, you know, what's interesting, which I get frustrated with when I'm looking up Hadith, two ways to find Hadith. And you've got to keep looking. And that's one of the problems I have when I'm looking. If you look at the top, you'll see it's listed three different ways, actually four different ways. So this is where it becomes important. Now, Sahih Bukhari means, when you're saying Sahih, it means that the Hadith is reliable. It's a trusted source. Now, this is given by Aisha, the mother of Islam. That's what she's called. She's the child bride, the wife of the prophet. Now, she's the one who's narrating this. It says, the commencement of the divine inspiration, Allah's messenger, was in the form of true dreams in his sleep. For he never had a dream, but it turned out to be true. And clear as the bright daylight, then he began to like seclusion and used to go into seclusion in the cave of Hira, where he used to worship Allah continuously for many nights before going back to his family to take necessary provision of food for the stay. He came back to his wife, Khadijah, again to take his provision of food. Likewise, till one day he received guidance while he was in the cave of Hira. An angel came to him and asked him to read. Allah's messenger replied, I do not know how to read. Keep that in mind. That's what he said. I don't know how to read. Okay. Prophet added, then the angel held me forcibly and pressed me so hard that I felt distressed. Then he released me again and asked me to read. And I replied, I do not know how to read. Thereupon he held me again and pressed me for the second time, and I felt distressed. He then released me and asked me to read, but again I replied, I don't know how to read. Thereupon he held me the third time and pressed me till I got distressed, and then he released me and said, read in the name of the name of your Lord, who has created all that exists, has created man out of a clot. Read, and your Lord is the most generous, who has taught the writing by the pen, has taught men that which he knew not. Then Allah's messenger returned with that experience, and the muscles between his neck and shoulders were trembling till he came upon Khadijah, his wife, and said, cover me. They covered him, and when the state of fear was over, he said, Khadijah, oh, Khadijah, what's wrong with me? I was afraid that something might happen to me. Then he told her the story. Khadijah said, nay, but receive good tidings. By Allah, Allah will never disgrace you, for by Allah you keep good relations with your kith and kin. Speak the truth, help the poor and the destitute, entertain your guests generously, and assist those who are stricken with calamities. Khadijah then took him out and had to an old man that had lost his eyesight. Khadijah said to Waraka, that's this uncle, oh, my cousin, listen to what your nephew is going to say. Raca said, oh, my nephew, what have you seen? The prophet then described what he had seen. Raca said, this is the same angel Gabriel who was sent to Moses. I wish I were young. I wish I were young, he says. I think I skipped a phrase here. There's a statement in here that says Waraka converted to Christianity. Now, if you know anything about this definition of what they're saying about Moses, you know that this concept that they're talking about is called Gnosticism. It is not Christianity. And that's part of the ignorance that's on display here. Again, he keeps going. He says, this is the same angel who was sent to Moses. I wish I were young. He added the same statement. Allah's messenger asked, will these people drive me out? Who's asking that? That's Muhammad. Waraka said, yes, for nobody brought the like of what you have brought. Treated with hostility. If I were to remain alive till your day when you start preaching, I would support you strongly. But a short while later, Raka died, and the divine inspiration was paused for a while so that Allah's messenger was very much grieved. So, wait a minute. So, did Gabriel tell him he was the prophet? Not according to Aisha, the mother of Islam. Where do they get that from? So, go one more place. This comes from the Sur al-Rasul. And I'm just going to, we've already read about the encounter. Now here's the stuff I want to tell you while it says there. And here they gloss over. The person who translated this is, quote, said to be a Christian. I think he whitewashes a lot of stuff. And I think he's cleaning it up and making it better for Islam. Because if you look at the hadith and you look at this, there's certain issues. But then, you know, I'm looking at things trying to be scholarly, and Islam doesn't allow that. Okay, I'm just going to start in the middle. It says, it has Gabriel saying, oh, Muhammad, you are the apostle of God, and I am Gabriel. He has him looking there. He says, I began to turn my face away from him, but toward whatever region of the sky I looked, I saw him as before. And I continued standing there, neither advancing nor turning back, until Khadijah sent her messengers in search of me and then gained a high place. Then he parted from me and I from him, returning to my family. And I came to Khadijah and sat by her thigh and drew close to her. She said, oh, Abu Qasim, where have you been? By God, I sent my messengers in search of you. And they reached the high ground above Mecca and said, I take refuge in God from that, Abu Qasim. God would not treat you thus, since he knows your truthfulness, your great trustworthiness, your fine character, your kindness. This cannot be, my dear. Perhaps. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We have a problem, people. We have a problem. These two sources contradict each other. Was it Khadijah and Waraka who told Muhammad that he was the prophet? Or was it Gabriel? The Islamic sources don't agree. So, again, one source has Gabriel telling Muhammad he's the prophet, and the other has the mother of, you know, which comes from the mother of Islam. That's from Sir al-Rasul. And then the other source, which is supposed to be more reliable, which would be the mother of Islam, his child bride, says it was Khadijah and his uncle Warak. So is it right to tell students something about Muhammad that even Islamic sources contradict? Now, you know, anybody want to comment on that to do that? Give you a chance if you want to comment. Is it right to tell students, just looking through the comments, this is my issue. Again, if I'm supposed to be presenting facts, I'm supposed to be presenting, as a social studies teacher, your job is to present cause and effect. All right. That's 99% of your job in teaching history, cause and effect. This happens and this happens. You know, this causes this. But if we have two sources, major sources within Islam, who can't agree on how Muhammad became a prophet, we're starting out with problems. But that was just one thing. All right, page 265, the Hijra. Okay, after some of his followers, this is again from MacDougall Littell's history. After some of his followers had been attacked, Muhammad decided to leave Mecca in 622, following a small band of supporters he sent ahead. Muhammad moved to Yathrib, over 200 miles north of Mecca. Okay, I want you to think about this. There's a problem, a severe issue here that I didn't even mention when I was going through this. Yathrib is south. You know, am I wrong, guys? I mean, please listen. I mean, if anybody can comment and tell me I'm wrong. When I look at a map, Yathrib is south of Mecca. Anybody else want to comment? Oh, and I don't know. All right, so I'm just going to go back and I'll keep going on this. If nobody else wants to comment, you're free to. I'm not muting anybody, so let's keep going. So this, the Hijra is the Arabic word for migrate or migration. The textbook doesn't tell your children that the attacks were mostly nonviolent boycotts. Followers of Muhammad had difficulty buying food and selling goods. Their own families disowned them. The textbook doesn't tell your children that Muhammad was seeking an ally for him and his followers, an ally that would agree to return and attack Mecca in the future. When the Meccans learned of Muhammad's treachery, they went after him. His uncle was protecting him. It is the only reason why the Meccans didn't kill him. They wanted to kill him. Wouldn't you want to kill the guy that was willing to commit treason to that would kill you and your family? Something to think about. Of course, that doesn't get communicated here. No, they whitewash it. They even offered his uncle an adopted son in his place if he would just let them kill Muhammad. Well, they don't tell your children this. They don't tell your children that Muhammad had his nephew lay in his place as he escaped so that the Meccans would think he was still in bed. There are so many things in this story that are anything but positive that if the whole story came out at the beginning, when we should, if we're going to teach Islam, we should be teaching it like this. Let them hear the whole thing. Questions like, why does anybody believe this? Why does anybody follow this prophet? I mean, this guy commits treason to kill his brethren. I mean, he claims it's his tribe. And he doesn't see problems. But that's not what this textbook said. Keep that in mind. It doesn't even mention it. These are called crimes of omission, sins of omission. We're going to get into that. So is there danger when someone hides something this important to your children? The lies, the commission of the sin of omission, the lie of omission. This is incredibly, incredibly important. I like this quote, and I had to throw it in here. Lying is done with words and also with Adrian Rich. So here's this big problem. Mecca may not have existed at the time claimed. Now, I've been reading, I connect with people on in academic circles, and my goal is to read academic materials and put out academic materials. I want the average person to see the truth. I want to be able to communicate on a scholar level. At the same time, I want every person to be able to see the facts. I'm just going to grow this so everybody can see this. Okay. That better, everybody? Okay. So I want to get back, and I have a quote to read from you from this scholarly article I read today, and I loved it. I felt I had to share it. And, you know, it's nice to find good material. And so I just want to share this. Daniel Janosik starts his article on this. And I'm going to give you the quote where it comes from in the next slide. He writes, and this is the beginning of his paper. He writes, Muslims claim that Muhammad was born in Mecca, and the earliest parts of the Quran were revealed to him there. Indeed, without Mecca, the whole story of Muhammad would have to be reevaluated, and the very foundations of Islam would have to be questioned. However, recent archaeological historical research calls into question whether Mecca even existed in the traditional time of Muhammad, which they say is 570 to 632 AD. There are no archaeological artifacts from Mecca until the 8th century. The first erection of Mecca in external literature, the first mention of it, occurs in 741 AD. And the first time Mecca is listed on a map of the Middle East is 900 AD. Indeed, if Mecca doesn't exist in the early 7th century, then who was Muhammad? And where did he come from? Now, with that said, if we tell students that Muhammad was in Mecca during the time we have evidence that it may not have even existed, do we have a duty to tell them this may be a lie? I would think so. Okay. Social studies teachers, a mandate to teach cause and effect. If this part of the story is wrong, or there is evidence that it may not be factual, I'm not saying, again, it may not. I didn't say it isn't. Do we have a duty to let them know it may not be factual because this and this, because we have evidence, we don't have any evidence that this place existed? It doesn't mean that it didn't. Shouldn't we also be presenting that at the same time? Now, if this story, if any part of this story is wrong, here's the underlying thing we need to make sure we communicate. If this part, any part of the story is wrong, can any of the belief structure called Islam be trusted? Think about it. Because this is what's being told to your children. They're not communicating the facts here. They have a duty to communicate the facts. Daniel Janosik, again, he's an apologist, professor. I'm in love with apologetics. I'm sorry. So I love apologists. And this is where I'm going to recommend, if you'd like, I will even send you a link to this article. If you'd like, you can email me at BEREAN_research@yahoo.com. And I will send you the link to his article. I love it. Question. Is this statement, I think, is important. It says, if the history can't be verified, then the religion itself will be open to claims of fraud, deception, hypocrisy, and illegitimacy. Muslims will no longer be able to claim that their religion came from Allah and that their Quran is the final word from God. Islam will merely fall into the category of man-made religion. This can't even be disputed. I mean, there's nothing here that can be disputed. Now we get back into this textbook, page 265. In Medina, Muhammad displayed impressive leadership skills. He fashioned an agreement that joined his own people with the Arabs and Jews of Medina. The term Medina is what Yathrib becomes. Medina is basically the city of the prophet. These groups accepted Muhammad as a political leader. As a religious leader, he drew many more converts who found his message appealing. Finally, Muhammad also became a military leader in the growing hostilities between Mecca and Medina. Again, could this even exist? Could this page even exist? Could this line even exist if Mecca doesn't exist. But we're going on. This is what they're telling kids. Problems here, people. Now, I'm going to recommend, and I will do this over and over and over again, that you go to my blog, paulsutliff.blogspot.com, look up the keyword Hijra. I will also recommend you buy my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, because in there, this chapter is so extensive, and the amount of research I've done on it and put on up on the website, I've had several counterterrorism experts write to me and thank me for doing this. Now, I'm not talking about people just in the United States. I'm talking from around the world. I'm not saying I'm great. I'm saying that my research here is respected. Okay. Hijra is considered the birth of Islam. It is not when Muhammad has his first encounter with an angel. It is not when Muhammad starts to preach, nor is it when he gets his first convert. Islam begins when Muhammad becomes a political leader. The moment Muhammad left Mecca, Islam is noted as having begun. This isn't even when the followers of Muhammad left. Most of them left before he did. This means Islam begins based on Muhammad becoming a political leader of a group in exile. This is why Islam is not able to celebrate politics from religion. It's not acceptable in Islam to do that because Muhammad was a political leader, period. Now, this is something you'll see moderates try to do away with, but they don't want to talk about it. But that's the facts. Not sharing this information allows your children to be told lies. Do you see the danger when truth is hidden? Okay. This is what I stole some of these from another, these slides from another presentation I saw, because I want to get into this topic of omission. And the actual, we're going to be talking about it as a crime. So the rule of law is basically no one's above the law. In this country, everyone is subject to the same laws. And that's why you'll see, you know, when we talk about justice being blind, it's because everyone is supposed to be subject to the law. Everyone. That's the way our laws are written. It doesn't mean that it happens every time. But that's the way it is meant to be. Now, this is what got me when I was doing my research. This part right here. Two categories of crime. Crime of omission, crime of commission. Crime of omission. Failing to do what the law requires. Think about it. Like getting a driver's license before driving. So is omitting facts in a social studies textbook criminal after we were attacked by the followers of Islam on 9/11? You be the judge. When one link of information is omitted. One link. What I'm about to tell you, I found in no social studies textbooks that discuss Islam. I've looked at several. I've looked at about 20 different textbooks on world history, specifically to evaluate their addressing Islam. None of them dare to mention this. Here we go. Muhammad attacked the Quraysh Jews during this time period. Ignoring this part of Muhammad's life distorts who he is to students. They call him, the followers of Islam call him the perfect man. So let's explain what a perfect man, what a perfect man. After the Gaza Jews surrendered, he personally supervised the execution of over 400, the estimates were between 400 and 900 men, that include boys who had just entered puberty. There was an order for the death of all the remaining males, puberty age and older. In that order, they checked boys to see if they had a single pubic hair. If they had a single pubic hair, they killed them. He then gave the women and children as booty. They became slaves. Look at my sources here. These are Islamic sources. I'm not making this up, people. But again, this is a complete genocide of the tribe of the Qurayzi Jews. I don't think I pronounce that right every time, and I apologize. But today there's no one to tell us the correct pronunciation. Think about it. Omission. Hidden hazards. Page 265. Returning to Mecca. In 630, the Prophet and 10,000 of his followers marched to the outskirts of Mecca, facing sure defeat. Mecca's leaders surrendered. The Prophet... Wait a minute. We have a problem here, people. This is a high school textbook. It's supposed to be unbiased, correct? Why are they referring to Muhammad as, they're not using his name, they're using this title, the Prophet, as if there aren't any others, as if he's the only one. That's what the word, this is a definitive, using the word the, it tells you it's singular. The Prophet. Turning in 630, the Prophet and 10,000 of his followers marched to the outskirts of Mecca, facing sure defeat. Mecca's leaders surrendered. The Prophet entered the city in triumph. He destroyed the idols of the Kaaba and had the call to prayer made from its roof. Is that true? Is that the facts, people? The facts. Let's get to the facts. This textbook calls Muhammad, again, not just not a prophet, but the prophet. Again, this gives superiority to Islam. Has been used in the Rochester City School District in New York State for over a decade. That's even after I asked for the book to be removed when I discovered these errors. And you know what happened to me for discovering those errors and asking it to be removed? I got the head of the social studies department angry with me. He didn't want me to take part in anything. In fact, when I asked to present this stuff to the entire social studies department, I was ignored. In fact, the guy who I first presented this material to was the man who originally approved this book. In fact, his name's in the book. And he apologized to me. He said I shouldn't have approved the book. I won't say his name because I consider that man honorable. And he was one of the reviewers of the book. Here's the problem, people. The biggest problem with social studies teachers. They are the true generalists of the high school. Your science teacher who teaches chemistry has to be certified to teach chemistry. Your biology teacher has to be certified to teach biology. Your English teacher has to be certified to teach what? English. Your English teacher has to be certified to teach English. Your math teacher has to be certified to teach all these things in math. But history, can you absolutely know everything? Can you know every culture? Can you know everything? And the answer is no. Then along comes somebody like me, my background. I studied to be a pastor. I have a great love of apologetics. But again, I tell people I was willingly ignorant. I chose not. I did. I will tell you, I chose not to know anything about Islam. And for that, I'm guilty. But I'm standing up now. I'm trying to get you the facts. I wish I had been awakened earlier. So let's talk about this so-called quiet entrance into the city. The prophet enters the city. It's not peaceful. He threatens. He grabs the guy who leads Mecca first. He shows him his army. He tells them, tells that mayor type person, this leader of Mecca, that he will slaughter every single individual in that place unless he surrenders. The man goes to the city and does what he can to surrender. And he's told it'll be a peaceful surrender. Then Muhammad sends his people to slaughter every single poet who dared defame this man Muhammad, because Muhammad didn't understand the Jewish stories. He just claimed he did. He got them wrong every time, and they were laughing at him. He killed every single person. He ordered their deaths, every single person who dared speak against him. But that's not told in here. That's not told to your children. Why? What exactly is in every social studies textbook on Islam? What do they think your children need to know? It's in every single textbook. This. They have the picture of the Dome of the Rock Mosque in Jerusalem, and a statement will be next to it, or a small caption, or they might even write a paragraph by it. About it like this. This is the story I found in Prentice Hall's World History page. It says the rock on this site is the spot from which Muslims say Muhammad ascended to heaven to learn Allah's will. With Allah's blessing, Muhammad returned to earth to bring God's message to all people. But that's an incredible lie. Muhammad never went to Jerusalem except in a dream while sleeping with one of his wives in Mecca. So I ask you this. If he was in a dream, as it's said in Islamic scriptures, in the dream, Muhammad, there's more here, people. In that dream, you know how Muhammad got to Jerusalem? He got on a flying ass, flying donkey, by the name of Barak. Okay. Again, how come you're not telling people this? Okay. This is the incredible sadness here. So we start out and we say, the rock on the site is the spot which Muhammad had a dream that he was at. And he got there by riding a flying ass. Okay, when this is in a history book, you know, what's going to happen? The kids are going to start laughing. So Muhammad rode a flying ass and that was named Barak. Okay, Barack Obama gets elected, and everybody starts laughing when they hear his name because that's what Muhammad rode, a flying ass. Oh, wait a minute. What had happened? You would have a lot of questions about that guy running for office, wouldn't you? When you had that name that was named after a flying ass. Now, here's another silly question. Can you know the exact spot someone else was in their dream? Can you know? Thus that nice little picture there. Where am I? In this dream, Muhammad claimed to see a Solomon's temple. It had been gone for quite a while, and a church stood there at this time. So here's what I discovered about who gives the approval of the religion sections in textbooks. I want you to look for this topic, these terms. You can do a search later. Institute on Religion and Civic Values. You'll find out if you type in CIE, Council on Islamic Education, that it will take you to a site called Institute on Religion and Civic Values. That should shock you. These are the people who approve your religion section in textbooks. Now, this comes from my second book, Civilization, Jihad, and the Myth of Modern Islam. There are additional Islamist influences on your children's textbook. One group calling itself the Institute on Religion and Civic Values brags that it has been reviewing textbooks for longer than the organization has existed. According to IRCV's own website, since 1994, IRCV has served as a content reviewer on world history and textbook programs developed by the major K-12 publishers. Listen closely. If your children have a textbook, a socialized textbook by any of these companies, be very concerned. Houghton Mifflin, Harcourt Brace, Macmillan, McGraw-Hill, Holt Reinhardt and Winston, among others. Publishers appreciate our expertise in teaching about religion and our familiarity with recent scholarship pertaining to various world religions. Among numerous books reviewed by the IRCV are Houghton Mifflin's Across the Centuries, Harcourt Brace, Our World Story, and Holt Reinhardt and Winston World History, Medieval to Early Modern Times. You know what they're doing with that book, don't you? Yeah. Our reviews have helped improve the coverage and framing of complex topics in ways that are age-appropriate and standards-compliant. People, this is written to teachers. It's not written to anyone else. You know, those are key words written directly to teachers to draw them in and sucker them in. At least IRCV owns up to its previous name in the far right bottom of the website. And today, when you go look this up, oh, they're even more honest. I wrote this book in 2014, did originally in 2014. So what happened between then and now? At one point, because I was out there exposing them and several others were doing that, they took the site down and it disappeared. You're going to see why. Let's keep reading. At least IRCV, like I said, it owns up to its previous name. It is the Council on Islamic Education, CIE. Dr. Shabir Mansouri is the founder and leader of both CIE and IRCV. Mansouri had founded the Muslim Brotherhood groups like Sound Vision, whose page states it is a Muslim's duty to get involved in the public schools. Bridget Gabriel, founder of Islamization of America, had a quote from Dr. Mansouri we should be aware of. I think Bridget Gabriel's group was, I think that was Act for America. I think that's my mistake on that one. Here's this quote from Dr. Mansouri. I am waging a bloodless revolution promoting world's cultures and faith in America's classrooms. The Council on Islamic Education was known for its work on textbooks before changing its name to IRCV. The Middle East Forum wrote about their influence. The Council on Islamic Education is part of the textbook terrain today, a content gatekeeper with virtually unchecked power over publishers. It advises activists in schools to generate grassroots teacher support, to leave a paper trail, to affect cordiality, and to insist on meeting with educational officials. The Council, did you catch that? the council, similarly works with publishers to ensure that they meet a certain standard of sensitivity. Sensitive to who? The Council of Islamic Education Standard. The Council on Islamic Education is an agent of contemporary censorship. It demands ground rules upon which interaction with publishers can't take place. It warns that it may decline requests for reviewing published materials unless a substantial and substantive revision is planned by the publisher. For more than a decade, history textbook editors have done the council's bidding, and as a result, history textbooks accommodate Islam on terms that, they use the term Islamists, I'll say the followers of Islam, demand. This is all the more disturbing since the council has a curious view of the nation and world whose history it wants to rewrite. People, are you seeing why what your children is learning is dangerous? So how I got involved the second time around, I'm going to say second time around, I went to a class to teach that was to prepare us to teach AP World History. I figured, I had special ed kids and some were getting out of the label special ed and some had excelled in some areas and not in others. And I had one particular student who was a genius when it came to history. As time went on, I thought maybe, just maybe, someday I'll have a child, a student, who can go into an AP class. So I wanted to see what they taught. So they let me go to this class, and I did get paid for it. I did get a completion certificate, 32 hours. I will say it was interesting. I will say I never want my child in this class, but again, it was interesting. At first glance, this book that they handed out for free. The definition of Dhimmi protected people. King David and King Solomon reigned over Palestine. Anti-Semitic bias through the textbook was seen in the first 10 minutes. I got upset. I was sitting there at this meeting where, at this meeting that was being taught by who? The sponsors of AP World History. I mean, this is Princeton, people. This was the college board class. So I could teach this class. I was upset, angry. I asked questions. I demanded answers. Nobody would give them. Everybody was afraid. How can you ask those questions? I got told to shut up. And, when you tell a research writer to shut up, what do? We go learn more. So I created my, I called a friend. I started writing a review of this textbook. And I realized since I was still teaching, I had to maintain the higher ground. I had to have a position that you can't say I have any bias because, again, I'm a Christian, and doing that means I have to find someone I can trust to attack this evil lies and sins taught to our children about Islam. So I invited a friend, Saeed Shabi, who is a Meccan Muslim from Canada, and we put together a textbook review for bias. It's called Reveals an Agenda Toxic to the Safety of This Nation. Now, I submitted this to the publishers, and I submitted it to several people in my district. This may sound crazy, what I'm talking about. Let me read a little bit from that Let me see if I can pull this up now. I wanted to read just the beginning of the AP review piece I did. This is part of what I wrote and why I wrote. I says, when I first was handed this textbook in a week-long advanced placement world history seminar sponsored by the College Board, I looked for one definition to see if it had anything of an Islamic influence on the text. The word I looked for was dhimmi. Now, I'm going to tell people this is the thing to do. You want to find out how much Islamic influence is on your child's social studies textbook, I want you to look for this word, D-H-I-M-M-I. Extremely important that you do this. In this textbook, it said it meant protected people. Once you know what dhimmitude means, and they use this, you know this textbook is crap. It should be put in the crapper. It should be shredded. It shouldn't be allowed to be read. My suggestion, people, if you're wondering why it makes me so upset, I want you to go buy a book called Dhimmitude by Bat Yeor, Y-E-O-R. Her work is outstanding. It is the best. It is the most highly academic scholarship on the topic, and it will bring you to tears. It's written to the average person. It's written so anybody can grasp it. And yet it is still highly academic. It is still scholarly. I'll keep going back to this now. When I sat down and started to look at the textbook seriously, I discovered that it hints basically that King David and King Solomon reigned over Palestine. That's the first textbook I've ever, ever seen with that kind of misinformation. It's also a clear display of anti-Semitic bias. The index was outside of, you know, it was off by one page all the way through the textbook. I mean, all the way through, it was off. You know, initially it led me to believe the Holocaust wasn't even mentioned in the book. You know, when I found it, when I found the Holocaust, it never mentions how many were killed. I wonder why. Oh, there were 6 million killed people, but they wouldn't find out from an advanced placement textbook. Oh, and you know what? You know what term they didn't use? That we are required to teach at this time period? A required term that we must and are mandated teach. That term is genocide. It was absent. It was not in the book. Not on this topic. You know, I got upset looking at this, and I contacted friends. I want you to think about this. Bias is given to 14 and 16-year-olds who are not cognitively developed enough to detect these things. Worse is that this text is in the sixth edition. Could it have been as bad in each edition? I wrote to the authors that were still alive. Yes, I said still alive. They asked me why I was waiting, why it took me so long to find it. You know, because I have no kids in AP. I wasn't working in an AP class, but when I find these errors, I'm seriously concerned. And none of them admitted to writing these sections. Did hint. Yes, they did hint that some of them were responsible. But they don't want to talk about it. And if anybody wants a copy of this write-up, again, write to me at Beran, B-E-R-E-A-N, _research@yahoo.com, and I will send it to you. Just ask for the AP expose. And I will send it to you. My request, if you ask for it, please send a copy to your local school district. You know, I want you to think, I'm going to mention this next, and then I'm almost done with this section. Think about those kids who take advanced placement classes. Generally, they are the smart kids. The students who take AP classes are, according to one study, 33% more likely to finish a four-year degree program. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Stats, earnings increase and unemployment decreases, educational attainment rises. The students who take AP classes are the future. They're future leaders of the country. Also, the students taking the classes are looked up to academically as their leaders in classes where no one has noticed this bias. Students now are accepting this bias as standard academic behavior. What is the purpose of exerting bias like this into textbooks for AP students if not to create a future where adults are desensitized to this specific bias and accept it as normal? Keep this in your mind. I get disgusted on this topic. I apologize. And I get angry when I think about it. So I apologize again. Let's talk about these hidden hazards. Does anyone have a clue why this stuff is in textbooks? I do. Its purpose is to make your children, your teenagers, your 20-somethings in colleges sympathetic to groups like Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the Palestinian Liberation Front, the PLO, and on and on and on. This misinformation encourages them to join groups like Code Pink, Students for Justice in Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace, MSA. Group that is neither Jewish Voice for Peace isn't even Jewish. That's according to my Jewish friend, Andrew Herod. Does anyone have a clue? I want you to think about this. Are you grasping the dangers here? Now, I wanted to show this because this is another thing that happens in schools. They have this thing called world hijab. They come to the schools and they tell everybody, put on a hijab because it's cultural sensitivity. They don't tell you the reason why women wear this in Islamic culture. It's to protect them. It's to tell the Muslim men that anyone not wearing one of these can be sexually molested. Oh. So if you're wearing one of these, you're not supposed to be sexually molested. Look at those kids there. They might be 10, 11. So they think it would be okay to molest 10 and 11-year-olds? Well, Maria Muhammad married a 6-year-old, bedded her by the age of 9, so they had to have these on to protect their children. They don't tell people that. They don't tell them at all. And this is where ignorance is dangerous. People, when Iran was this protesting hijab in December of 2017, here in America, there were people going around and telling your children to put on a hijab in their schools. 100,000 women came out in 1979 to protest the hijab in Iran. So the question I have, do you want to be a part of the solution or do you want to be a part of the problem? My approach to problems like this changed about 20 years ago when I was going to complain to a vice principal about a problem with forms he was giving out to kids. While I was waiting, more seasoned colleagues was standing next to me, and he said, you know, he saw what I wanted to complain about. He said to me, stop being part of the problem. Be part of the solution. So I went back. Basically, it was a pass that the principals were signing for kids who got caught in the hall suite. Basically, they got caught skipping a class, and they got sent. And The pass was crappy. It didn't tell me the information I needed to be told. So I went back to my room. I sat down. I designed a form I thought was better, and it was used for the next 10 years. No, I didn't tell a lot of people I did that. It taught me. Stop being part of the problem. Be part of the solution. So what can you do? I say solution one, become the best and informed person and the best resource for your own children first. That's the beginning. I'm going to give you great information. Others out there will. All you got to do is ask. All you got to do is seek. YouTube, there's a lot of great people out there, and there's a lot of people on this team that are outstanding that'll give you the information. Second, get involved in your local PTA. Run for the school board. Stop allowing this crap to happen in your school. Remember, the job of board members for schools is usually, you don't get paid, but it's part-time. Here's another thing you can do. Call the Middle Eastern Women Association whenever your local local Muslims want to come around and start talking about World Hijab Day. Call them. Look them up. You'll find some outstanding information. The link is right there. Middle Eastern Women's Coalition.com. They're a great organization. They are Christians. They will come out and tell your principals the truth. All right. So that's my show for, that's my share. And I know I put a lot together. Anybody have anything to say? I apologize for it being so long. I hope it doesn't scare too many people. Thank you for that. Thank you for those nice comments out there. Who is the author? The author of those books? Or are you talking about the author of the textbooks? The author of the textbook. Textbooks are written by an average of 15 to 20 people. Some are given credit to usually two major writers. And they get the majority of the credit. However, the truth is they didn't write the vast majority of the book. They are the editors, or they are the compilers. When I started writing, I wrote special education study guides for people to become teachers. So what they had to do is to study these guides to take their local teacher, or not their local, but their state special education teacher certification. So as I did this, I hired people to write our sections. Their names were not listed in the book. I think they deserved having that, but that's me. I wrote several sections. I was one of the major writers. So before all of this started, before I even got in on any of this, I had books in every Barnes and Noble across this country. Was I getting money for it? No, I was one of those who, it wasn't a ghostwriting job. I got credit for it, but paid ahead of time. I needed the money then, so it worked out for me. But I didn't get all the facts out on Islam till later. I didn't have this need, but it's because of that training that I received to do those things that I really got into a deeper love of research, which made me who I am today. I look at a lot of what I presented today, and I think about the horrors of the facts that are not told to our children. You know, I want to cover so much material, and I keep thinking about all this news. But I want to open the mic. I'm going to share a link here into the chat room. And I'm going to put it in, and I'm just going to invite anybody who wants to come in and dare and share their own thoughts. So I put the link out there. If you're willing to join in, I'll be gullible enough to say, please do come in and comment if you want to comment on what's been on in your kids' schools. I'm concerned, people. I want the facts out now. I've got so much to learn. Now, what can you do today? Again, I've given you suggestions. Oh, let me invite Eric in. I didn't even notice he was here. Sorry, Eric. I want people to know this truth. I want people to hear the truth. Anybody have any comments about what's in their kids' school textbooks? Eric, do you have a comment about what's in your textbooks at the school you teach at? It's on this topic? Okay. All right. So my question is, do you have any comments on the misinformation that has to do with Islam in school textbooks? Yeah, I didn't. That's one thing I really didn't touch is who owns the textbook companies. And what there are some organizations that were actually owned by a dictator family, Gaddafi's family. That was, I can't remember which one now. Yeah, but that stuff is there, people. When you start looking, you find this stuff and you start, oh, my God, the money. Yeah. Eric, please go ahead. I'm sorry. That's actually that's actually what we in New York State, the required answer. For the 20 years that I taught, they had a required question that was on every single Regents exam. It said, how was Islam spread? The correct answer, the only acceptable answer. And there were other, here's the answers that were given on this test. One, Islam spread by the sword. Two, Islam spread by migration. Islam spread by cultural diffusion. And you had to select cultural diffusion or you failed that question. Yeah. Anybody else? Is that Connie there? Hi. No, I've heard of that. Somebody mentioned the name. I think maybe it was you in the chat room mentioned it earlier. So the more I think about it, I may have heard of him, but I don't think so. I've read so much on things. I just don't remember reading anything by him. And see, people don't understand that. It's actually important to understand education language for parents. And the biggest reason on that has to do with especially combating this thing called CRT. It's essential that you understand it because what's happening is teachers are actually telling other teachers, we don't teach this. But I'm talking teachers unions. I know my own. I live in Libland, New York. But our own teacher union is telling us that we don't teach this, yet there are standards, state standards, that mandate we do this. And Eric, I'm guessing in your state, that's also a state standard. I mean, this is the importance of understanding that. Well, understanding the importance of this is that you have to understand that these are these state standards that are out there that we mandate we teach these things. This is why it's, you know, when people want to know what's taught in their classrooms, in their kids' classrooms, generally you can go to a state education site and download the standards. I don't know if that we used to get them when I started teaching to us as a paper format. As time went on, they no longer did that. They said go online and download it to your computer. Now I'm guessing they do. That's what I've been told for the last, oh my gosh, 10 years maybe. Yes, they call that cross. So this is another. Yeah, they call this cross-curricular instruction, and that was a big push a little ways back. Yeah, it was cross-curricular standards, and you could probably find it. But yeah, people, we have to. That's the number one thing we have to be. I had a pastor many, many years ago before I had children sit every parent down and tell them, your job as parents is to be the best and most informed source for your children. Well, for those of us, that may mean the best source for your grandchildren, the best source for your nieces, your nephews, whatever. The best source for our local church. Be out there, people. Be sharing and let those around you know that you have this information. Ways to do this. Number one, if you don't feel confident, share out our videos. I'm going to say our. There's an incredible team of people here. You can see them, Rad. I'm still going to keep laughing. I love the title in the cell here. That came as a... So actually, I think you're missing it, unfortunately. You've got part of it. It's not equity. I want to give it to you exactly as I got out of a text. I got out of a textbook that was supposed to be given. I do indexes for books. That's part of what I do on the side. And there was this CRT manual to be given to personnel departments. Now listen to how this was described. And I've seen this described in several CRT manuals for education as well. Listen closely. I'm going to say this once, and then I want someone to tell me what's wrong with this. Okay. The terms that they use repeatedly, it's these short term. You ready? Diversity, inclusion, and equity. What's wrong with that? No. Put those three. What's the acronym? Okay. If you had to abbreviate diversity, inclusion, and equity, what do you get? Die. So that's how they wrote it. They wrote it continually in CRT stuff. All right, and then they put the acronym as DEI. Yes. That was a James O'Keefe, Project Veritas. Yes. 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 The one thing they're not talking about is that the child suicide rate has risen since this instruction has begun, and that parents, one of the reasons why parents get upset, it's not necessarily the suicides. Here's the other thing. The children are going home and asking if they're evil because they're white, or if they're never going to be successful because they're a different color. And will they always be oppressed? Yeah. Why should they try? That's part of the purpose of this. Okay, so what you're talking about, here's the technical terms. You ready? The teacher language. Outcome-based education. Am I right, Eric? And when they it's crazy. Oh, no, you have to do those. You have to do those, but after, see, that's the difference. That's the difference between the school environment and reality. If you're talking about class time, no, they don't expect you to do anything on time. But in a regular setting, you get fired for doing those things. This is, this is about being the most informed source, and this is how we have to do it. So I worked in a school, and I worked with people who totally believed everything they were told. Great sheep. So they listened to CNN. They listened to MSNBC. They listened to all this stuff, and I told them, they got told things like Trump was colluding with Russia and all these things. I said, I've watched all of this. And I said, I'd go back and I'd say, well, if you listen to this testimony, I said, go back and listen to it. It says that this guy is lying through his teeth. He actually told everybody he was lying through his teeth. So do you trust him? Every day I do this. They'd want to get me going and, I just point out, you're being misinformed. So here's the truth of it. Every day I did this, and they would sometimes laugh, but here I am 2, 3, 4 years later, and they have now just come out and said what I'd said originally. The Steele dossier was paid for by Hillary and the DNC. Oh. So, yeah. Yes, no, that's the actual facts. Those are the actual facts. It was a survey, and they created it right there in the bar. Yeah, that's actual factual evidence that proves this story, what he just said. There's a lot of stuff out there like this, unfortunately, today, and that's why we, as I'm going to say, Christians especially, we have to be the best source. This is one of the major duties we have in this time of imbecility. I'm going to use that. We have this time of willful ignorance. I am fighting willful ignorance, and every one of us is. And some of us who live in Libland, if you're living in Cali or Oregon or Washington, some of us have family, so... Yeah. If you're in England or you're in any socialist government state, especially Canada lately, your choices have been taken away. Your freedoms have been taken away. Your liberties have been taken away. And I think That is the number one thing we can do. We can beat them at their own game. We have to play that. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about something I did this week, and I think I talked to Eric about it. I just got to look it up. And just take me a second to find it. What I did this week, and I think I've got it. There it is. So it will take me a few seconds. Sorry. I'm working with a small team of people who are fighting what they call the red-green axis. And there's, you know, I'm going to invite, see if I can invite some of great leaders in here that are with me into this team. And when I say fighting the red-green axis, there are former CIA, there are former FBI, there are former law enforcement, and I am the oddball. I'm the retired teacher. And they are working together and learning to do what we can and can't do. You know, and they see something, they call it out, and we do what we can. So one of the people shared out this message that shared about the Arizona State University. And I want to so I read the Arizona, this is from an interfaith, and it was bad. They started this interfaith group. They made a statement against the tearing up of a Quran at the Arizona State University. But if you read the original article, it actually said there were several books torn up. It actually said that this guy was on drugs. He was drug, you know, he was a convicted felon. They said all that. So here's what I wrote. I said to this lady, I'm not going to give her name because she's honest. She was honest and she replied to me. And I think she, because I credit the people in that small group, because one of them in particular, my friend from Canada, has been trying to get me to use their language. And I think that's one of the things we have to start to do, their language. So I wrote to her about her article exposing the horrors of, and the evil of a torn Quran and how it was offensive. So I wrote to her. So after reading her posting about a horrible violation against the Islamic students at ASU, I'm curious why you excluded those of other faiths, since you are an interfaith group, after all. You specifically denied by omission the act of destruction of other books torn and destroyed besides the Quran that may have been offensive to Christians, Jews, Sikhs, Hindus, atheists, and more. Is your interfaith group only supportive of Muslims today? I'm personally offended by your non-inclusion of other faiths by not mentioning the other books torn up, and only mentioning the Quran as if it's the only book destroyed by the drug-addicted felon who violated a restraining order to commit the act. Again, they didn't mention all that. So, you know, we wrote back and forth, and I said to her in my last – let me see if I can get my second note I sent to her, just a second. You know, she wrote back. We were going back and forth, and I have to admit I really enjoyed the – back and forth, and I found it exciting because she was very clear. So she thanked me. She said, "Thank you for sending the very effective letter to the AFZIM, pointing out the apparent bias favoring Islam and total inconsideration in not pointing out that students of other faiths were also affected in the hate crime. Their immediate reaction was to come to the defense of Muslim students. I would guess that care was involved." Oh, sorry. That was somebody else who said, but there were people in my team were guessing that care was involved. I say my team, the team I'm part of. Well, that's I'm only talking about the interfaith source. Now, let me tell you what their source was. So this is what I said to her. I wrote, where's the other one? I'm trying to find that second article I wrote to her. But I wrote to her, look, you know, after she responded back, I says, look, you received a source that was inaccurate. Someone did this purposely. I says, you know, I'm a retired teacher. Eric and I, we teach kids about the importance of being able to trust the source and not being able to trust the source. So I said, if your source lies to you or it tells you misinformation, you're not supposed to trust it. And I would tell my students, you have to, you know, if you find something in there you think is accurate, go look and see if you can find it in three other sources. Then, okay, you know, maybe you'll cite it again. It says, now, if you go to that source, it's got three other sources that cited it, and all four of them are wrong. What are you going to do? Now you got to distrust all four sources. I says, don't use them. So I says, my question to you is, are you going to out this source and make a course correction for your organization? She outed them. This woman who led the interfaith group in Arizona State area, university area, she outed them. It was the Muslim Student Association. So I wrote back to her. I says, really? The Muslim Student Association. Muslim Student Association is the part of the parent organization of Al-Qaeda, known as the Muslim Brotherhood. They came here in 1963, and they bragged about setting it up as their first entity in the United States. Okay, so you trusted as reliable the parent organization of the group that killed 3,000 Americans on 9/11, almost 3,000. So that's your reliable source, really? I gave her links to my books. I promised if she wanted, I'd send her my books for free. I says, you have a duty to stay informed. You have a duty to take a look at organizations that call themselves faiths to find out, since you're an interfaith group, find out if they're dangerous. After all, Jim Jones was dangerous. I mean, he killed almost 1,000 people by having people drink juice. That sounds harmless, drinking juice. But if you know he's touched in the head and you're an interfaith group, do you have a responsibility to inform others? Now, if we know that Islam is dangerous and has a desire to kill others, do we have a duty to inform others? Absolutely. Now, I didn't come out and say it was Islam when I wrote to her, but I let her know. I says, you know, I think this is what it comes down to. If you have knowledge that something's evil, you have a duty to expose it. You have a duty that you can't hide from. You can't, we'll use that term, shirk from. You can't run from it. You have a duty. With Islam, it is pure evil. With Islam, as I said in my last show, when you have a follower of Islam living next to you and they believe in the idea of the Islamic paradise that Eric and I talked about last week, you might want to get a gun to protect your daughter. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. CARE did that to they were the ones who filed the hate crime charge, but the source that the interfaith group originally used was the Muslim Student Association, who sent that information to them. That's why, CARE is actually Hamas in America, for those who don't know, and Hamas in the United States is a declared terrorist entity. So again, why CARE is allowed to exist in the United States is beyond my comprehension. My solution, people, is to get the government to pass my resolution I've offered it to anybody who's willing. Again, I'll offer it again. If you just call and ask for my congressional resolution, send me an email, BEREAN_research@yahoo.com. Please do, and I will share that share it with you. I have been using it for decades. I love it. Yeah, I'll do that. People, you got to become informed. Now, here's the thing. I shared this again recently with my group, and there were people who, again, the group that I work with, and I remind, there were Claire Lopez stood behind this. Tom Trento stood behind it. The Center for Security Policy stood behind it. Understanding the Threat stood behind it, with John Guandolo's group. And, you know, I went to about 20 congressmen and women and asked them to present this resolution. All this resolution does is recognize that the Muslim Brotherhood within North America has declared war on the United States. That's all it does. That's it. Okay. It doesn't declare war. It doesn't say anything. But if we passed a resolution that said that, here's what would happen. And every one of them knows this. Every single listed organization that has openly admitted in some form or other that they are part of the Muslim Brotherhood would be closed. So that throws out MSA, CARE, ISNA, MPAC. I can go on and on. The list is about 40 organizations long. They would be shuttered. People would be deported. And that is the truth. Because all we, you know, in recognizing they have declared war on us, we start to protect ourselves. We start to look at those organizations as criminal organizations. They will be banned. All it has to do. People are, yes. One of the years he was, I think my last attempt was in 2017, and I didn't have any success. But again, the Democrats were in charge, and they were too wussy. And that's the very sad truth. No. I wrote it as a joint resolution, so it would be presented in both houses. So it could be presented in the Senate and in the House. The reason I did that is if both houses agree to this, it is incredibly powerful as a resolution. Now, resolutions have no force of law. That's important to understand. So they could simply pass this. And most resolutions, you know, they're just, okay, you know, somebody died, or okay, you know, they all say aye. That's when they pass resolutions, 99.99% of them pass, and people are just raising their hand. Okay. That's the reason I wrote it as a resolution. Catch is, it's incredibly powerful. And every intelligence officer notices it. I had shared this information, and one of my all-time, I can't think of his name right now, one of the people you idolize people when you think about, you know, becoming better at what you do. I feel horrible because I can't recognize his name. He actually, this great writer, he wrote Preachers of Hate. I can't think of his name right now. He's one of my favorite all-time writers, New York Times bestseller. I feel like an idiot because I can't remember his name, but he wrote to me and told me that was my best work. And, you know, I'm like, oh, wow. I mean, yeah. My suggestion, people, be daring. Yes. Yeah, Kenneth Timmerman, that's his name. Kenneth Timmerman. He's one of the people I've idolized for a while. I love it. I can't. Okay, I'm 57. Am I allowed a senior moment yet? Oh, wow. Okay. Kenneth Timmerman is somebody I have enjoyed reading for a number of years. I like his open honesty and his brazen truthfulness. So I love his work. I think Preachers of Hate should be required reading for anybody who is studying that time period, which was the first Gulf, which was the Desert Storm. I think it should be, again, required reading, and anybody reading that. But you sit there and you're Kenneth Timmerman. It's actually in the chat room now. 57. Well, just turned 57, so we're getting there. Well, I want to tell people there's a lot of great people, a lot of other great hosts out there. And Eric, we have Brad, we have Connie. I don't know if Connie's able to get her videos back up yet. We have a great amount of people out there telling the truth. And sure. Okay. I think we, yeah, go ahead. I think you muted yourself somehow. We can barely hear you, Rad. I don't know what happened. Yes. Yes. Oh, that sounds fun. Yeah. So the other thing I'm going to say, people, when you're listening, you're hearing some great intelligence people. Get out there and share our work. Be bold. Share it on Facebook, Twitter, any form of social media. And a lot, we don't mind haters. We don't care. Because all we care is that facts get out, truth gets out. And, you know, part of my joy in the work I do, I usually hire what I call liberal editors. And they may hate doing the work because they're getting taught things. But what's always humorous to me when I have a liberal editor is they write back angrily, "No one will ever be able to prove you wrong. Your sources are 100% accurate." You got to do that, people. You got to get these sources. You got to have it out. You got to get this information out. Yes. My hope is that the work I'm doing with these last few books is, my big hope is to, you know, I have to one is to get out and do public speaking again in the midst of all this insanity. The other is that it gets into the colleges. And my purpose in doing that, I want it in the intelligence community. I want it in DHS classrooms, these last two books. There is great reason for this. Number one, it is President Bush we have to thank, President George W. Bush we have to thank for Islam not being looked at as the enemy. We owe him that damaging. He's the one who did that. He is the one who, George W. Bush. No, the son. George W. Bush is the one who ordered, through a policy, he gave a speech, and he said Islam is not the enemy. And speaking as someone who studied intelligence analysis, it was his policy. It became a policy decision that Islam should never be looked at as a potential enemy. And that is a fact, people. It's recorded in intelligence analysis textbooks. So, again, I'm somebody who studied that information. We don't look at many things, and we have to, because our lives, our livelihoods, our safety has to be evaluated based on things like that. We have to be careful. We have to be wary. Watch out, people. Be safe. Be safe. I'm going to sign off of BTR, which I usually do with a song, so I'm just going to pull that up. While anybody have any comments? Okay. I'm hoping, yeah, I'm hoping that we get truth out. That's my
American girls and American guys will always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole raining down on you. Oh, brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass.